What is happening, beautiful listeners? How you all doing? Me? Is good, baby. Welcome back to the show, Into Deep. I'm your host, Jack Rowland. Today, I'm joined by the incredible Melbourne-based psytrance producer, Squid. Squid's high-energy, interdimensional tunes are a psychedelic experience themselves and light up dance floors at some of the best bush doofs in the country and abroad. Squid is also the host of the podcast, Tuna Fat. If you enjoy quality chats with some of Melbourne's best creatives, then I highly encourage everyone to check out the podcast, Tuna Fat. All right, without further ado, please welcome to the show, Squid.
Is there a point to all this?
I think we're getting in too deep.
You don't apply. Bad luck.
Oh, I have one speed, I have one gear. Go, 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 go.
I'll tell you when we're getting into deep, too deep, too deep, too deep, deep, deep.
Squid, how are you, mate?
Jack, I'm good, and I'm really, really, I'm pretty stoked to be back behind the microphone, just putting headphones on and setting the mic up. It's been a while.
And nice to meet you too, man. It's like, I'm sure, as you know, with your podcast, when you have a guest coming up, you spend the week kind of devouring as much information of them as you can. So it's like good to kind of, good to get to know you and good to meet you finally.
Yeah, likewise. I think we've got a few mutual friends. It's interesting. I haven't done that in the past with my podcast. I've been like, chuck the mic on and then just meet the person as we go. But it's definitely backfired in a few situations where, like, it would have been handy to know a bit more information about people.
Well done. It's a fine line, isn't it? You know, like, you kind of want to go in blind sometimes and just, yeah, exactly what you say. But I just think the more info, the better.
Totally. I'm actually curious to know what sort of stuff you've been looking up on me, because...
Oh, man.
Who knows what's out there?
I mean, I found your OnlyFans. That was a good few evenings in. Dude, honestly, I've been listening to your music and like, to be honest, man, like, I usually don't listen to that much psytrance unless I'm like on the dance floor, but I was cranking your Earth Freak from this year, or was it last year's set? And I was painting my studio, and it just instantly sent me into like perfect flow state. And I would just got like an hour and a half of the most productive painting as I was like listening to your set. It just like got me in the zone. So thank you for that.
Oh, wow, man. Thanks. That's phenomenal to hear. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. That was a pretty special set coming back from like a year or so of lockdowns in Melbourne then like the first thing back. And
was that the first party, was it?
Yeah, that was the first thing back.
Fuck. That would have had
an
energy.
And then we came back and we went straight back into lockdown. But yeah, there was a serious, like, honestly, that set, I've played some big sets, but that, for some reason, that set felt like almost everything in my musical life has led up to this moment. Like,
really?
It was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Fuck, that's a good feeling.
It is.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, it was so funny, like, because you can hear the audience in the background as well at a few points, and like at one bit, I think you just drop like the beat or the bass and stuff, and someone's just like, "Fuck yeah!" And I'm like, it's so Australian. Yeah, you know exactly where this set is being played.
Yeah, totally. So definitely good. Had a Queensland accent to the "fuck yeah" as well. It was pretty gross.
Absolutely. Man, is being like a paid DJ just the best job in the entire world? I mean, I was at Pitch recently. I just got a free ticket to it, and yeah, first festival I'd done in about 2 years. And man, I'm just looking up at these DJs. There's an entire just whole stage worth of people all just rocking out. Fuck, that's got to feel good.
Yeah, man. I'm actually glad you asked that question.
Sick.
It has felt like that in the past. Like, I guess right now I'm actually dealing with like a bit of a fork in the road sort of moment with like performing and where I'm at with my music. But yeah, in the recent years before COVID, yeah, that's what it was. It has been fucking amazing. Like, it's been truly amazing to like come to a point where I can play my music and get paid for it, and like people genuinely enjoy it. After doing music my whole life, and not really getting festival opportunities and stuff till I was like in my 30s, like early 30s. Yeah, it's a pretty crazy experience, and I definitely rode that wave for like a good 5 years. of like, wow, it's like finally happening. And yeah, it's been amazing. Like, don't get me wrong. It's off its head, especially when you travel for it. Like, even if it's just traveling to another state, it's bananas. Like, it still blows my mind that people will fly me somewhere for me to play my music. It's really like, yeah.
Dude, your music's sick.
It's the greatest privilege. Like, I'm so humbled every time it happens, honestly.
Yeah. Do you get treated better when you're interstate or international just because you are like interstate or international? Like, they put you up, and or is it all just about the status of the crowd you bring or something, or your following?
I don't know, to be honest. Like, I think in like the doof world, you know, like doofing is just pretty fun. So when I'm in Melbourne or Victorian festivals, I'll drive myself there. So I have my own setup, and I've done that for a few interstate festivals as well. So I don't want to say like I haven't been treated well in Victoria, but definitely, yeah. Like, when I've gone overseas to play, it's truly surreal because people are like so grateful to have you and like, yeah, put you up in nice places and like give you like bottles of absinthe and shit, crazy shit like that. But
excellent.
At the same time, there's been some weird touring rough experiences, but yeah, it's all part of the all part of the fun.
I was listening to your podcast, Tuna Fat. Everyone should go and check that out for sure.
Thank you.
It's really great. But I was listening to your episode with Arthur Song, aka White Bear or Form Null, nice, as he currently goes to. And yeah, you know, he was kind of talking at one point. You're talking about when he was having a bit of a break, burnout or something. And I think you're talking about performing. And yeah, it really got me thinking about the nature of electronic music being so much of it is, I imagine, sitting at a desk in front of a computer. I imagine a lot of, you know, programming and putting it all in. I'm sure you'll also add some instruments at some point. But, you know, to build up your folio of work, I guess most of the time would be similar to an artist, I'm guessing, kind of by yourself, yep, in isolation. But the difference between like an artist and a electronic musician is all of a sudden you're stuck on a stage in front of all these people. I would have no idea how to how to, like, that's the polar opposite of your process, I imagine. Is there a bit of getting used to?
It is, man.
Is there training in performing? And what makes a good electronic music performer, do you think?
Firstly, on a side note, I'm glad you brought up Arthur, because I've been thinking about that chat recently with my current sort of where am I with my music and what am I getting out of performing at the moment sort of thing. And I remember him saying like, oh, I don't really miss being on stage. And I remember at the time being like, oh, really, man, that's crazy. I miss it like hell. But at the moment I'm like, yeah, I'm like stopping bookings for a little bit because it is really a little bit too much for me at the moment. That whole, right, like, I guess, paradox of like being such an insular, solo, lone wolf, creative person in your room, as you would know, like with painting. It's a very like internal space, and the duality between that and then like projecting out your art in like a real, I mean, I am very vulnerable on stage because when I get into the zone, it's, you know, it's my music and I'm really feeling it and I'm really just connecting with the crowd. I don't plan my sets or anything, but the point being, like, it is a really vulnerable space, and yeah, it is quite intense. Like, when you're sharing that with 1,000 people or whatnot, to answer the end of your question as well, like, I'm lucky that I've performed music like most of my life, whereas, you know, being in bands when I was younger and like even as a young kid and doing all that, and I've kept that pretty consistent through my life. So being on stage is like my safe space, almost as safe as the studio. But in recent times, for whatever reason, like it's changed a little bit for me. So I'm actually trying to decode that at the moment and sort of work out where I am with it.
Man, I mean, probably a lot of it is lockdown. You know, I mean, I went from being an extrovert to an introvert over 2 years. You know, it's a big adjustment. It's weird. Like, I found by the end of the 2 years of lockdown or whatever, I started making up excuses of why I can't go to that event or this event. I'm like, fuck, what's happened to me? This is not the Jack from 2 years ago. So Yeah, you know, there's probably a huge anticipation for the first party, but there's also like a bit of a reprogramming that needs to be done.
Mm. Yeah, that's I'm glad to hear that in a way, because I think, like, I'm not sure what your living situation is, but like I've been living alone for a while, and especially even before COVID, I was living far away from Melbourne, and I do now as well. So my main social time would be at gigs and festivals, and that would be week in, week out for years and years. I would see like all my crew every week, and that was my connecting time and my social time. But then COVID obviously took that away for a lot of people, but I felt like being away from a city and away from people, even when it was opening up a little bit, I still wasn't seeing people. And like,
right.
I definitely felt, I've felt that turn to like full introversion as well. And it's pretty weird, man. Like it's,
yeah, I'm not digging it. I'm trying to like make real efforts to kind of retrain myself just to, I mean, I'm not that bad. I'm not like a fool, but I'm just like right in the middle of preparing for an exhibition. So I'm doing a lot of solo studio time now, and I really have to like, no, get out, you cretin, you little creature. Get out, get the sun on you and see some people. It's necessary for your health.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but do you find that you kind of get lost in your own head a lot when you're spending solo creation time by yourself in the studio, or are you really able to just like forget about the brain and then just paint? And
nah, I mean, I'm kind of, it's a bit of a hard slog, I reckon, getting, I don't know if you find the same if you're working on an album or a set, trying to get a set, but or just producing music, but yeah, you know, it's just a lot of grinding, a lot of hard work, and with the kind of art I do, there's just no escape from putting in the huge amount of hours. So yeah, it's like it's not always enjoyable, to be completely honest. There's definitely moments when you finish a work and you're like, fuck yeah, that's coming up nicely. But yeah, definitely there's it's a bit of a struggle, I find, putting on an exhibition, to be completely honest. So yeah, there is a lot of time just you and your thoughts, but thank God for podcasts and things like that. Get you thinking about I don't know.
Definitely.
You know, just to jump into my own echo chamber of of misinformation.
Of your own voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I only listen to my own podcast, of course. So
Yeah, totally. No, that's you bring up some interesting points there about the, it's not always fun. It's not always easy. And like, I think that's what I've struggled with over the last 2 years, especially the last year of like, you know, the first year was like, oh, COVID's like sucks and this is weird. And, but like, it's kind of interesting because like apocalypse, but then like last year it was like, oh man, for real, it's still going.
Yeah. Who'd have thought the apocalypse really would be it. So boring?
Yeah, I know, right? Like, no one's looting for, like, cars. They're just stealing toilet paper. It was just, I know,
it was a real letdown apocalypse, to be honest.
I know. But it definitely killed the, I think what you just said then, like, rang a few bells. Like, it did. I'm not sure if it killed my creativity, but the time to, like, feel how hard and laborious, like, creating can be, it was, like, a lot more present, rather than just being like, all right, I've got to get some stuff done because I'm playing a gig this weekend, or like I want to get some stuff done because I'm going to go see some friends and we're going to like do stuff together, which is kind of, I don't know. It's not like I do music for the stage, but that type of music, like high powered dance music, it's like you need the crowd and the stage experience to like really keep inspiring it. Like you can get inspired from life a little bit for like psytrance. Well, I do obviously, but that pumping energy of a dance floor and like a festival is really where I got the most inspiration from. Mm. So yeah, it's been like, I haven't stopped creating. I still make weird shit, but like, I guess having a brand or so, or an expectation to keep having new music, it's yeah. Without that input, I think it's really highlighted the laborious nature sometimes of making dance music, where it's like, yeah, it's not all fun all the time.
Mm, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And that feedback loop of seeing people react to your music is very important as well. I found it very difficult to create during lockdown. I moved at one point when I think when we first went into the proper lockdown, moved my studio into my living room, and it was it was a challenge. I couldn't ever relax on the couch because there's a half cooked looking painting just looking at me every evening. So yeah, it was a struggle. Yeah. Totally not you mean. that's interesting though, hearing about your inspiration. So it is this like cool positive feedback loop where of inspiration, where bringing it to people, seeing people absolutely cut sick, and I guess what paying attention to what bits people really respond to inform your creative process?
100%, man. Mm. Because like I just write the music that I would want to hear, you know, and that's like on a dance floor. And then if I can see what other people are liking to hear, it's cool to sort of integrate that a little bit. Or it's not like I write music for the dance floor as per se. I guess fashion it to be popular. I mean, but you can definitely sort of get a feel of like what's flowing and what's not flowing, even with a half finished track, and then like play it and be like, oh, maybe that bit that I thought was really sick is not actually that well responded to. Maybe I'll switch it up a bit. But it's definitely like when I'm making trance music, I'm making the music with my hands, but my head is always like on a dance floor with people in the dark with lasers and just like really feeling that huge dance floor energy and like sort of just pretending I'm space traveling with everyone, you know, while I'm writing it. And
man, your safe space sounds badass. That's a good.
Maybe that explains why Star Trek has become my safe space in the pandemic, because it's closest thing to it. Yeah,
nice. You're saying like you were playing bands and stuff all your life. What kind of music were you interested in playing or interested in listening and playing before you discovered electronic music? And when did like psychedelic trance enter the into your life?
Wow, huge, good question. Well, I guess to answer the second one first, I probably got given like some infected mushroom in like year 8 or something.
Yeah, that was my entry point too.
Yeah, like off a friend, I was like, whoa, this is sick. Like,
Vicious Delicious, I think, was the first album.
Yeah, so and I think it was Becoming Vegetarian or something like that.
And I
was just like, oh my God, this is sick. But that said, I had been into electronic music like most of my listening life, I think, like very early on. You know, like my parents would be playing Triple J and stuff, like this is the early 90s, and listening to, I'm not even sure if Mix Up was around then, but they were always, you know, the early to mid 90s is like the peak of freedom of expression in electronic music, in my personal opinion. Like it was just like the Wild West. Everyone was getting these new synthesizers and just discovering these ways to use them. And there's just so much wild, there wasn't like genre specific electronic music. It was just like, oh, like dance music. And that just covered such a giant variety of music. So that was when I really got into it. Like I remember listening to like a lot of, even like Public Enemy, like their beats were a bit dancey, and then getting into like a lot of Apollo 440 and, like Aphex Twin and a lot of like early jungle and drum and bass in sort of as a kid, getting like tapes off like my dad's workers, like he had laborers and stuff, and they would just like be like, oh, check this out. So I really got onto it really early, and at the same time was playing drums and guitar and learning to play in bands, and I was always loving rock music. But it's been a very like parallel journey. I've always had like a foot in each door, and being a player, I think, especially being a drummer, like that sort of leans you towards electronic music. Like once you really get into like a bit more IDM breaks and drum and bass stuff as a drummer, you're just like, oh my God, like this is amazing. This is perfect music. And then like long story short, I ended up at, so I think Rainbow Surf was my first festival. I was already pretty much into psytrance from a few friends sending me like, this is very early, like Ace Ventura mixes. And then I went to Rainbow, went to Maitreya, and then Maitreya, like I loved Rainbow, but like Maitreya, I was like, oh my God, like this is paradise. Like this music, it's like 140 BPM plus psychedelic trance all weekend. let's just space travel. I was like, well, oh my God, I didn't know this place existed. And like, I am now home.
Yeah.
And that really like ticked me off onto like, all right, I'm going to make psytrance now. Like I was making a lot of drum and bass and stuff at the time. And I was like, nah, like this is the shit I want to make. This is like beautiful music.
Yeah. Yeah. Sick. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Very similar. I don't know, awakening I had with Rainbow Serpent. I just didn't even know this existed. I knew like dance parties existed. I'd been to parties. I'd been to like, you know, shitty big like Armin Van Buuren's white party trance rave.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I went to all that. I'm like, yeah, this is fun. But it was still contextualized in like a nightclub kind of thing. And then you go to Rainbow and it's just bursting with creativity from every angle. Everywhere is just a visual feed. It just felt like absolute freedom. And it's just, I couldn't even comprehend that it existed, that it was just, it's just a business model, you know? I'm like, what is this playground? It doesn't make like, holy shit. My life was, honestly, it changed my life.
I'm so glad to resonate that on that with you. I was the same. I for many years and like still kind of do like measured my life as sort of like before Rainbow and after Rainbow.
Because yeah, totally.
It was that life changing to be like, I am not alone in how wildly creative like my soul is. And like through life, I'd met a few like people that were creative on a similar level and like, yeah, cool. Like we vibe. But that was just like, oh my God, there is a fucking planet here for people who just want to express creatively all the time.
I had like so much kind of, and I knew a lot of people in the same boat. There was like a kind of like apprehension before you go, like, oh, bloody hippies, you know, what are going to roll around in the mud? And then you go there and like, no, these are the good guys.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was awesome. Yeah. Sorry. Go on.
There you go.
No, I was just going to say when we were talking, you're talking about your previous influences. Was the Prodigy ever?
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was kind of what a fantastic crossover. Like, what is it? Almost like a crossover from like I guess kind of this punk world or something into like just hard electronic.
Yeah,
so good.
Oh, stop it! Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. I didn't want to. Like, I could go on for hours about my 90s influences, but. To be honest, probably like my two biggest influences electronically would like number one be the Chemical Brothers and number two be the Prodigy. Like those two, I guess, bands like absolutely changed my freaking life in the mid-90s. When I heard both the Chemical Brothers, I think 94 Boiler Room set at Big Day Out, and I think the following year or the year before or something like that was the Prodigy. Oh, I'm going to butcher it. It might have been Bristol or something. Anyway, I heard them, I taped them off Triple J. And I used to play that just over and over again. And even now, if you listen to those sets, they're still like almost ahead of their time. Like the way they were doing things live with synths and just the way they cut their music together, especially the Prodigy and the Chemical Brothers, was just this complete melding of like genre, like, I don't know, culture, feeling, everything. And just, man, like those, yeah, those tunes are.
I feel like there's something like
emotional talking about.
Awesome. I feel like there is something, like many genres of electronic music, sometimes you can pinpoint the time frame or they're of their time or whatever. Maybe like dubstep could be a very distinct time of evolution of dance music and same with like maybe trap music or something like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like, the Prodigy and Chemical Brothers, now that you think about it, there is something very timeless about their sound, I think. Yeah, Prodigy Prodigy for life. It's great.
100%. If you chuck on like Breathe now, if you put Breathe with like Breaks music of today, the production values just hold up 100%. Like it holds up so hard on a rig, you know, like with anything today. It's just phenomenal.
So, you know, you had your Maitreya and your Rainbow experience and it was primed for a very fantastic career in being a paid producer. And producer, right? You produce all your own music?
Yeah, all my stuff
and do your sets, that I play is Do you also play other people's stuff in your sets, or is it all your own stuff?
It's all my own stuff, except I will, like I started Higher Recordings with Joshkin and Sean about six years ago now.
I love Joshkin.
So I will play. Yeah.
Shout out to Joshkin.
He's a legend, man.
Yep.
Shout outs to Joshkin. So I'll play like Higher Recordings tunes, you know, a couple of times in the set, like from fellow artists off the label. Or like their remixes of my tunes, but yeah, it's either all my music or yeah, a couple of Higher Recordings tunes smashed in there, which is very, I mean, obviously making the label, it would be to suit my style. So it's very like, it flows very well with whatever else I put in there.
Mm. So this, you know, you would have played all sorts of festivals everywhere. What made this, so you were saying before this Earth Frequency set just after the in between lockdowns, yeah. that was peak performance that or what?
I mean, like I don't want to like devalue other things because
everything's unique for its own reason. Yeah.
Yeah. But just I think something.
What about like it? What about it made it so?
Man,
stuck
honestly,
with you.
it was the people, because something about that dance floor at Earth Frequency is like very, very special to me. Like I always have an amazing experience playing there and the crowd's always epic. But something about that time last May when Earth Frequency came back was it almost felt like the energy of the whole of the dance music scene in Australia, or at least the doof scene, was like coming together that weekend. Like the whole weekend was phenomenal. Anyone you talk to just had like a smile from ear to ear. Every dance floor was just this bubbling, joyous, like completely euphoric feeling, because even if you were in Queensland and you hadn't had heaps of lockdowns, you were still missing all your friends or like, and then everyone, there was a lot of people that had came up from Melbourne to go to it. So that was like one element, was just the coming together of everyone. Mm. And obviously the release after myself being locked down for so long and had gone through so many big life changes. I'd also like spent 2 or 3 days before the festival like writing 3 new tracks, and I opened with 2 of those tracks. And I don't know, man, it was just a combination of, yeah, just all those circumstances that led into it. And then I just think I played a really good set. Like I played some good tunes of mine, and I was really happy with it. And I think something to add as well actually is that Paul, who runs Earth Frequency, had approached me previously to that festival during lockdowns and said, oh, I want to do a Higher Recordings showcase on the Saturday night of your label. So yeah, the Saturday night was like our label, and sick. I got to program it and like pick the artists, and shout outs to all the artists that played, and shout outs to everyone who's made Higher Recordings for what it is.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so... So it was like a really big family feeling, man. And like at the end of my set, like it was the end of my set, everyone who played from the label, like we all got up together on stage, and it was just like this, it was like, holy shit, like I've made a record label that has got enough rep that, you know, gets asked to do a showcase at a festival. I'm like basically playing the prime time slot. Like this is amazing. Like this is just like, what the hell? Like this is crazy. And coming from like such a dark year of lockdown and all that sort of shit. Yeah, it was just a really special moment. And yeah, shout outs to the crowd, because they were electric.
Man, you do have to actually stop yourself every now and then, and you have to actually take it in and realize that your dreams have come true. You know, you've actually made your dreams come true. With a moment like that just sounds like, yep, everything's as it should be. Hey, this is kind of like a weird question, but like being, a trance DJ producer, and when you're performing, what's the correct term? Like person on stage is like, you're not exactly DJing.
Space traveler.
Interdimensional astral traveler. Yeah. Anyway, do you ever feel like you're somewhat of like a kind of, what's the right word? Like a shaman or a kind of wizard? Because like the sounds that you're choosing to kind of play with is literally like, changing the way the 1,000 people's behavior is. Like that's a weird question, but do you ever have that kind of feeling?
It's not a weird question. In terms of the word shaman,
a musical journey,
I was just gonna say, don't get me on down a rabbit hole talking about like why people calling themselves shamans, but yeah, let's not go there. I feel like, I just feel like a captain of a spaceship. Like that is, that's the best way for me to like articulate it, is I just feel like we're all on this spaceship together, and as important as my music is to like drive the dance floor, like it would not be the experience without every single little one of those people and every single movement they're making and word they're saying and like feeling they're putting out there to the world. Mm. So I guess I feel like more like a conductor of an orchestra or something right. like that. Whereas, yeah, it's a very level playing field for me. And that's why I don't like it when there's like big like lights on me on stage. I often ask the stage techs to just turn it down. And I really love playing at like smaller doofs where it's just like a trestle table, you know, in a marquee, and the people are right there. And it's just because I'm just one little part of the orchestra. Like I might be sort of calling the shots and, you know, captaining your ship and saying, we're going to go check out this planet right now. But it's no fun if we're not all there together doing it. So, it feels more like a collective sort of experience for me.
Fuck yeah, man. Made me want to go party. when I actually like came across you, not through your music, but it was your podcast. I, like I said, you know, if I'm doing a little bit of homework for a guest, I had a guest book, Tom Tanaki, and so I just kind of had a look to see if he'd done any podcasts, and I came across yours completely by accident. I've been listening to it ever since. It's awesome. Really great diverse mix of guests as well, you know, not just sticking to one lane. I love that. It's always good. You've kind of stopped doing the podcast for a bit. I'm here to tell you to boot it back up. why'd you stop the podcast, and is it going to come back?
I definitely need someone to kick me up the ass and make me do it again, like I do with most things in life. But to be honest, I'm really glad you asked that question. And short answer, it is coming back. Great. I've organized at least two guests, which is really good because I haven't done that for quite some time. To be honest, when I was doing it, I always treated it as a like very positive getting to know your experience with guests, and whatever their subject or profession was, that was what I was getting to know that week. And there were sort of tangents into the socio-political realm, which is what I very much enjoy talking about. But I felt like, you know, to paint a picture for people that weren't in Melbourne during last 2 years, like by the end of last year or mid last year, it was a pretty weird place to be. Like after like a year and a half of lockdowns, like shit was getting weird. And
it was.
It was getting weird in yourself. It was getting weird in your relationships and like your friendships. And it was just really weird, man. And then when like the, I guess we could call them like protests or whatever you want to call them, started kicking off, like, and there was a lot of division in my circle of friends and acquaintances being in, you know, psychedelic realm. People have sort of alternative opinions. Mm-hmm. I was at a point where I was doing these episodes and they were with people I was really interested in talking to, like Tom Tanaki. I think his takes on anything is just hilarious. He's just a great person to talk to. And I was interested in pushing the envelope to sort of discover why people would be adverse to what was being suggested at the time, such as vaccines and whatnot. But in my personal life, there was divisions happening that were amplified by the overall divisions in society. And I just got to a point where I went through a breakup. I started living by myself. I started working a lot. And I was just feeling really not good. And I felt like the podcast had sort of got to a point where, not in itself as such, but because I was so opinionated at the time about one way or another, I was also having a lot of arguments with friends and followers. Like I lost a lot of followers on Instagram and whatnot who used to like my music and blah, blah, blah. But it just got to this really like divisive sort of realm, and I just didn't know how to like come back from that. And I didn't want to like apologize for my opinion And I still don't apologize for like my opinion on things because that's my opinion. But I definitely wanted to take the time to personally apologize to people that I knew face to face as I came across them to be like, look, we have a differing opinion on something. You went the wrong way about it. I went the wrong way about it. We said some nasty things. Let's be friends again. And I've had the time now to sort of see people at festivals again. And some people like took it too personally and won't come back. And like, that's their loss. But a lot of people, you know, we're just like moving on with things. And it's been harder in some cases than other. But I guess like, because I'd amplified it so much on the podcast, I was so attached to that feeling with it. I didn't know how to come back from that. And I didn't want to just like do a false apology on air and just kind of get on with things. And yeah, man, like life's been tough, like break up, living alone and all that's passed now. But yeah, it was just a pretty tough time.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to bring that into the podcast.
Yeah, man. I mean, I can relate to a lot of that. And I think many people can, you know, friendship groups were getting very divided. I've also, you know, got friends on all different sides of the fence with that issue. And, you know, it's by the way, I don't think, I mean, I've obviously got no idea about your relationships and friends and all that, but I don't think there was anything that you said on the podcast that warrants any kind of an apology. You know, I think it was, rational decision. Cool. But, you know, it definitely, when you take any side on any political issue or any issue that affects anyone, it's going to, usually it's only the angry ones you really hear from, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was it, man. In the end, it just became a very loud minority. And there were people that were hurt and offended by some things I said, which was very understandable, and they let me know in a very nice way. But then there was just like the really loud, loud minority who, to be honest, to this day is still going on about things like, you know, and making a song and dance about it. But yeah, I'm sure you would have come across that sort of stuff in your world as well, as a lot of people did. But I think a lot of people as well in society fortunately didn't come across that.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to
a lot of my friends that I used to work with, they don't have any friends that like, you know, they're obviously their bubble is very contained to the very, very similar perspectives, which I think is, I'm sure you're the same. I've always been attracted to very diverse people and I've always been attracted to weirdos, you know. I say that with love.
100%.
I'm one of them, you know. And
same.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, it is interesting territory to navigate for everyone, but particularly when you're putting your perspectives out there. Your perspective, of course, being Dictator Dan, anti-vax and NW. No, I'm just kidding. And Bill Gates is a pedophile elite. Yeah, anyway.
Honestly, if we can say one funny thing that like was my favorite thing about all that, because we don't want to go down rabbit holes, is my favorite thing that circulated was that Bill Gates had made a microchip in the vaccine to control people. Blah, 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 blah. And they were sharing this schematic of the so-called microchip, and it was a schematic for a distortion pedal for a guitar. And that was just like, sweet. This has just gone peak weirdness. It's all just ridiculous.
Wait, this was like an article going around or something?
Yeah, it was like the schematic. No, it was like, this is the thing that is like the virus control microchip thing, whatever.
That's hilarious.
And it was actually the circuitry of a like distortion pedal. I was like,
that is so funny.
I love humans.
I mean, I'm sure like we've got, you know, similarities there. Like we've probably got a similar kind of take on a lot of that whole schmozzle. And I'm wondering, you know, we've been back to, I guess, some sense of normality for, I don't even know how many months now, quite a while, enough to think, you know, look around, everything feels normal. Do you have any, like, I'm kind of interested in, you know, reflecting on it and seeing possibly where the other side may have some points where how you think, I don't know, maybe, for instance, the Andrews government handled the situation. And do you think... what are your thoughts now that there's been a big space in between?
Well, I mean, I guess that's why I'm glad you asked that question, is because, like, obviously have had time to reflect. And, I still think This is my overall view, is I still think we're extremely fortunate to live where we live. And as far as kind of anywhere in the world for to having to be the last 2 years, I would still pick where I was, like Spingrouse. You know, it's had a lot of challenges, but man, like, we are so lucky here. And at the end of the day, like, you can say all you want about this or that or one side or the other side, but as a human, you've got to just, like, remember to be grateful for the fact that we live in a, yes, free and democratic country, in my personal opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
That said, I definitely went too hard on some people, only as a kickback to, like, you know, like, I didn't go hard from the start, but it was when I started getting people just being, you know, like, on anonymous people on the internet being really nasty that it really sort of caged me in a little bit, and I just sort of was like a cornered rat. Like, I was biting back harder and harder, and then it just, you know, amplified. But yeah, I guess now, like, having the perspective of where we're at now is just like, that was crazy. It is still going, but, like, that was crazy. Hopefully some of the people that I do care dearly about, we can be friends again. Definitely there is an argument for choice in some regard, but when it comes down to it, like, we are so fortunate to be here where we are and have the access to health that we are. So yeah, maybe it was a little bit too forced. I can see some people's perspective on that.
Mm.
And I can definitely see, like, the, when it got to the point of, like, hypocritical mandates where you could do this job, but you couldn't do this job. And, like, it did just get, like, way too intense. And it's just like, okay, like, now what do we care about now? Is this, like, a government statistic that we're trying to get, or do we actually care about people's health?
Mm.
Which is why I became reluctant to get, like, the third dose in the end. I did end up getting it.
Mm.
But I was just like, do they just want everyone to get theirs now to be, like, a statistic, or do they actually think it's good for you? I was, like, traveling, and I'm like, yeah, it's not worth the risk. I'm just going to get it. But
yeah.
Overall, man, overall, I'm just like, fuck, like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
that was wild. You know what I mean? And I guess to tie it in back to the podcast, the reason that I sort of stopped doing it is because I actually accidentally, like, when I was in that dark point, I accidentally, like, opened some files on my computer. I was trying to, like, delete shit, and it was, like, recordings of my first early podcasts. And I just kind of sat there and listened to them, and I was like, whoa, this was, like, so based on, like, curiosity and, like, positivity and just, like, really wanting to get to know people. And it was not cynical at all. Like, it was very open-minded. It wasn't just, like, blinkers on, I'm only going to be happy, but it was very much more based on curiosity. I was like, oh, wow, like, things have changed, but damn, like, my podcast changed, and, like, damn, I've changed, like, shit.
Hey,
I
want to
get, like,
there's nothing wrong with
good.
That, though. There's also nothing wrong with that, you know, like, as the everything around you changes and your mind changes on certain issues, like, yeah, I mean, I have a time limit of how long I can listen to old episodes. I think it's like an episode 6 months ago, I can't listen to it. It's too weird.
Yeah.
My mind's changed too much. But, and again, like, I mean, the way you're kind of painting it, like, for those listening, the episodes where you do have opinionated conversations, I don't think that I don't think there's anything. I thought they're very interesting, really good points, you know?
Thanks.
But yeah, exactly. It was fucking crazy, man. And yeah, it's for people who don't live in Melbourne and, like, even just the rest of Australia, it really was different, you know. And there was a collective weirdness for sure. And I mean, that's the thing, you know. Mm. Like, sometimes also, when everyone's making noise, sometimes it's just best to stop making noise and for a little bit let the pot cool down a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was it. And I've always been someone who's tended to, like, be very vocal on, like, especially socio-political issues, which was when, like, I got a bit of blowback, I found interesting. I'm like, yeah, like, I don't just care about, like, this. Like, I've been standing up for people's stuff for a long time, guys. Like, I'm not just making a noise because it's COVID. But that's when it was, like you say, I think it got to the point where it's like, all right, it's kind of like a broken record. Like, everyone is just stuck in this loop of, like, division and just so lost, you know, so it was kind of time to put the microphone down. But I want to ask you what, like, because I feel like I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast as well.
Thank you.
And I feel like we have a very similar style. What are your main influences for podcasting?
As in, like, what do I listen to?
Or, yeah, like, where do you think you've drawn your style from?
I can answer that easily. I mean, yeah, a concoction of a bunch of things, obviously. You know, despite what everyone will think about Joe Rogan was definitely an early influence for me. I was like, I've listened to him for probably over 10 years now. A lot that I disagree with him on, particularly in the last few years, but I don't think he's a nasty, evil right winger like a lot of, other lefty people that I know do. Yeah. I think he has a lot of positives to bring to the table as well. He's definitely encouraged me to exercise, which is good. But not so much with style with him. People like Louis Theroux, early Vice documentaries where they would go into weird little corners. I used to love those early weird things like that. I've loved conspiracy theories for a long time. So that, I don't know, little my own little investigations into that have always been fun, but I don't know. Yeah, a combination of there was someone else, but I can't quite put my finger on. But yeah, I don't know whether I'm. Duncan Trussell's like the best as well. Do you know Duncan Trussell?
I was waiting for you to say that.
Yeah, he's one of my all time favorites. But yeah, I don't know. I can't really put it down to any one thing.
Of course.
Yeah, but you know, also people like All Gas No Breaks is just like just diving into the weird head first without too much like needing to make any point, just like what do you think is fun. So yeah, quite a few things, but you know, I think that's the thing. Especially when you're taking on divisive issues, the main thing is like it's got to be fun. I've definitely, you know,
yeah,
it can be challenging at times. Putting yourself out there all the time, for sure.
yeah,
but it's fun. Point. It's super fun.
It is fun, man. I miss it. I miss doing it a lot. I'm like, once you hit me up to do this, I was like, I'm booking some people. Like, I'm getting back on this train.
Fuck yeah, dude! Awesome.
It's just so fun. Yeah, like you say.
It is a funny thing, like, you know, kind of, I just mentioned Joe Rogan before, but like one positive thing that I think someone like Joe Rogan has done was, were you ever a listener to the Joe Rogan Experience?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely, man. Yeah, for years. Yeah, like, many years.
One thing that all those comedians used to talk about is just how toxic the kind of comedy world used to be. And you know, everyone used to try and fight for the opportunity to get on the Tonight Show or get that sitcom, and there was a lot of bitching and a lot of burning of each other. And it seems, from my perspective, one thing that like kind of Rogan did is he created a podcast community that propped each other up, that really instead of it just changed the dynamic of combat to cooperation. Yeah, instead of combating each other, it turned into a cooperation, and bridges were built, and so many careers have been built from that method. And I really like that. I really hope that little old Australia can kind of develop something a bit like that, maybe through whether it's podcasting or whatever. Yeah, so that is it, you know, sharing to the world. These amazing creative people that we have access to.
I think that's a really good point, man, because a lot of my favorite podcasters will have in the past like referenced Joe Rogan and been like, you know, this guy like really did a lot for this platform. And I have the same feel. I think that was one of the inspirations for me to start the podcast, was like, we have so many interesting people in Australia, and we have so many talented people in Australia, and we have such a communal sort of, I mean, obviously it's competitive and it depends on which scene you're in per se, but like people are very supportive of each other in Australia creatively, because it's such a smell of an oily rag kind of industry, whether it's visual art or music or whatever. Like, we're so small in this country that just the economic flow in creative industries is so much smaller. And I was, yeah, I was inspired by that. And I was just like, man, we can do this here as well. And I'm really, that's why I'm stoked we're talking now, because I think this can be grown a bit more in Australia. I feel like since podcasts became super popular in the pandemic, I'm hearing a lot of like really polished, like Channel 7 produced podcasts and like very highly produced, like episodic or serial podcasts made in Australia. And not many like freeform, community-based sort of ones. And I know the people are there. So like I too hope that like it can grow more on that sort of community level as well.
Yeah. I also just think like, sorry to shit on the mainstream, I don't know, but so much of like the...
Do it!
So much of the like what Australia produces is like just like what's on TV or the radio shows are just so embarrassing.
I know.
Like... some of them are just like, we're better than that, right? I mean, like, remember when we were young and they used to have shows like Recovery and stuff, and it was like this kind of, this cool, like Rage at Night and stuff. And yeah, it was this cool, what was that guy's name? Dylan Lewis for Recovery?
Dylan Lewis, man. Yeah, he's been on ABC Radio lately.
Oh, has he? Yeah, cool. But yeah, just this kind of cool, like keeping in line, like, God, we got it. We're better than that, right? We got to create something better.
I think it's because we've become so Americanized, in my opinion, that we've like our mainstream just tries to like copy the American model rather than draw from like the rich culture that we have here. I'm speaking strictly to mainstream now, like Channel 9, Channel 7, you know,
whatever
the radio stations are. You know, whereas if you do dig deeper and you find you watch like NITV or some ABC, like ABC's gone a bit weird, but like, yeah, we do have such brilliant, talented, artistic, like gritty cultural stuff. You know, like the best Aussie movies are those like gritty, like really Australian feeling, culturally rich sort of experiences. And yeah, like, fuck guys, do better. Like the money's there now. Like stop trying to make like Desperate Housewives of Australia and freaking make like The Wire of Australia. Yeah. Like that's what I want to see. I want to see The Wire in Melbourne, not like Underbelly season 1 million or something.
I will say that Australia does do like dark crime real well, hey? Like Chopper.
So good.
Films like that. Like there's definitely some industries that Australia has carved out like its own genre of film, for instance, that is just I think actually as a result of the pandemic, I've heard through the grapevine of actor friends and some other friends that are doing like set design that I think like there's been a big shift of television production into Melbourne over the last couple of years or so. And I think down in like Port Melbourne and maybe the Docklands, there's just like really high budget things being produced at the moment. So I don't know whether that's because Australia was more cheap to film in and just travel became a nightmare. Maybe because we're an island nation, you know, and things were contained. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that there has been a big shift toward, you know, film and television towards in Australia, which is very exciting, I think.
Yeah, man. Anytime I hear creative industries in Australia doing well or growing or whatnot, I'm just like sick. That's what I live for. I want to mention as well, like you said, that Australia do crime. And we're talking about podcasts. One of my favorite podcasts for a long time has been Case File. Have you ever heard of Case File?
I've been recommended that so many times and not jumped in there.
If you like the gritty Australian crime way of doing things, you just let me just listen to that podcast.
Case File.
So Australian, but so well done. Top notch podcast.
Yep. Fuck yeah. Awesome. I was going to reverse the question. Like, what have your kind of influences been?
Definitely Joe Rogan for a long time. Same deal. Haven't always agreed with his opinions, and especially the last couple of years, unfortunately. But that said, he always has a very honest way of doing a podcast. Let's put it that way. Like, that's what I've always loved about it. You can agree with him, hate him, whatever, but he's being himself.
Yeah.
And like, I think in the world of where almost everything's fake, it's so refreshing to have someone who, man, he's got so much money. He could just turn around and just be like, nah, not doing this anymore. Or like, I don't want to do this. Or I can just do something else. I could pretend to be this. But he's like, no, I'll take some heat for being myself.
Mm.
And like, man, that can't be understated enough. Like, we are in such a cultural war over politically correct, over woke, like.
Yeah, totally.
Just crazy time at the moment, man. Not saying that social progression isn't an important thing, and I'm all for equality and all for like breaking down all barriers, but like the over political correctness and the very, very far left and the very, very far right, it's just created such a toxic atmosphere. So for someone who has such a rep to just be able to sit behind a microphone and go, hey, disagree with me, whatever, I'm putting myself out there. So he's been like a massive inspiration. There's another podcast that I want to shout out. It's called like the Swellian podcast, and it's like a two Aussie surfers who one's a journalist and one has been sort of the editor of a lot of surf mags when I was growing up, and he actually made one of my favorite surf films. But yeah, theirs is a very open form sort of casual podcast that I've been listening to for years, where they just get people on and just chat, you know, no agenda, just it's funny, but it does get deep and it does get political when it needs to be. And probably my other main inspiration for many years has been the Conversations podcast, which is by ABC.
Yeah, that's great.
Richard Feidler. Yeah, that's, man, like that's just the way that he could think on the fly and like ask questions and direct questions on the fly. I took a lot of inspiration from that. So, wonderful. Yeah, they're probably my solid inspirations.
Yeah. You know, you're like kind of talking just before about, you know, everything's just so bloody polarized right now and super woke versus these fucking crazy right wingers and blah, blah, blah. It's like everything's so extreme. But, you know, I've been kind of thinking, I was actually just having a chat with my wife before this podcast about that. And, you know, just the role that social media plays. And, yeah, I mean, it kind of ties into what we were talking about before and about the COVID thing, and so much of this uproar has all been about misinformation and stuff. But is it just me, or like, have you found this whole, like an example of how social media is just driving these, I don't know, people's thoughts? Have you found this whole like Johnny Depp, Amber Heard push quite strange? Like, I know it's kind of interesting and it's drama and whatever, but like, I just felt like one day all of a sudden every algorithm was pointing me in the direction of this thing. And I'm like, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. And then after a while, I just noticed that like it just felt like a concerted push from the algorithm or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, and then everyone's talking about this thing. I'm like, fuck. It's like, it just made me start thinking about what drives human thought or how manipulatable we are. You know, it's like, it's
so manipulatable.
For me, it didn't feel, and I could be completely wrong, and maybe I'm getting all conspiratorial now, but, but it didn't feel like an organic, you know, thing. It felt like a push, an algorithmic push on into culture, like an injection into Instagram and YouTube and everything. And fuck, it just started making me feel like, think about like how easy it is to control what people are thinking about.
It's maybe insane.
I'm thinking way too deep about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial, but it just seemed odd.
Not at all.
Like, I just didn't.
I mean, yeah, this topic is like a giant, enormous onion with infinity layers, but I'm here for it. But on the trial itself, like, I don't have an opinion on it because I don't know enough about it. Like, well, yeah, like.
But I'm talking about it, just like everyone else.
Yeah, and my phone's been doing the same thing. It's like I'll pop over the news page and it's like pushing all this Johnny Depp stuff at me. I'm like, what the fuck? And like I listen to like BBC News Daily and I hear it on that. I'm like, all right, cool. But this is not conspiratorial though. Like, we are definitely being manipulated by social media. It's been proven. And I mean, it's come out from the, I forget what those things were called, the analytic something or other scandal thing that came out 2 years ago that was like showing how they did read our data and like push information for us. And
what was that, Oxford Analytica or something? Yeah, something like that.
Cambridge Analytica thing. And I mean, it's happening, you know, and the way it happens so fast is kind of a bit mind bending. I heard a quote once that I often refer to in my brain, which is like, we're a primitive creature with medieval institutions and futuristic technology. And like, I think that sums it up really well, because this happened so quickly. Like 10 years ago, I didn't have a smartphone. You know what I mean? And like,
yeah.
And a lot of people didn't have a smartphone 10 years ago. Well, maybe it was a little bit more than 10 years ago, but you get the point. You know, it feels like yesterday that I like first opened up ICQ. I was like, what the hell is this? Like, I can talk to someone on the other side of the world. Like, this is amazing. You know, so
in
like a quarter of someone's lifetime, the world has changed so dramatically and is changing like exponentially more every day with when it comes to social media. And I don't think that mean you can sit here and have an objective opinion on how much it manipulates us, because I do feel like we are manipulated by it, unfortunately. It's kind of mind bending, man.
It is. It's like the you know, we've got all these ideas of the robots will eventually take over, kind of Terminator style was the thought, but they've just come as an algorithm, maybe.
100%.
I just read this just today I read this article that was saying that it was written by Vice. So, you know, yeah, there's probably biases there too. But it was reporting on how, I think, what is it called? The Daily Wire, I think, which is Ben Shapiro's, he founded network. Apparently they put tens of thousands of dollars into pumping ads on Facebook in favor of Johnny Depp. So, like, to kind of disprove the whole thought process of Me Too, and you know, this is where it goes too far or something. You're just like, it's all just like all these forces just kind of smashing us from all ends. And then you just go down to the cafe.
Like, you have no chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I didn't get you on here to talk about the bloody trial, but it's just like,
no. I do want to say something.
All connected with,
I do want to say something important about it, though, because I've like, I'm not sure if I did a mental health course about 4 years ago.
Cool, like
a diploma, and I have been interested in, through my own experience, like learning about coercive control and domestic abuse and all that sort of stuff, like being the receiver of it, and then looking back and being like, oh, I actually probably wasn't the best partner as well in, you know, previous relationships. But I do see something, without being too woke, like whether Amber Heard is guilty or not guilty, or like, I don't give a fuck about these two people. What, like, whatever. This is not in my sphere of influence. It's got nothing to do with me. But whether she is, whatever her, you know, whatever comes of it, the fact that there are jokes about her, like, and about like demeaning her and like demeaning, like if she's acting or stuff like that, it doesn't change her life. Like, it doesn't change her life, like what me and you think. But if you repost a meme about that, like a friend that you know, like a woman friend, a female friend, or a male friend that you know, may look at that and be like, oh, like maybe people still think this is a fucking joke. Like, you know, maybe I'm getting abused, and maybe maybe these people just think that shit's still funny. So I think that's like the one serious implication that I've seen, is just like, man, fuck. Like, I don't know. At the same time, I'm kind of just like, hey, celebrity dies. All right, let's fucking, who's going to be quickest to make the memes? You know, like memes are kind of like almost free reign, and that's why they're so good. But yeah, I don't know. That's just been like a bit of blowback in my brain personally about it. I'm like, oh,
no, it's
fuck,
a good point. It's something to think about. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things to think about in what you just said. That's a really good point to bring up. But you know, exactly like what you said, I'm like also the biggest fucking hypocrite in the world.
Oh, like spicy memes, who's got them?
Exactly. Totally. but yeah, fuck, I don't know. But yeah, and even kind of on what you're saying there as well, like, and I guess that kind of in a way ties into, you know, when wrapping up the you know, we'll temporarily, we'll say temporarily stopping the podcast. It's yeah, exactly. Because just putting out those kinds of takes. It's so I went to one of the Freedom rallies when they had and stuck a microphone in everyone's faces for the podcast. And yeah, it's not until one guy said very like seemed super rational and not a kook was saying, well, you know, I've lost everything. I've lost my job. Either I tie a noose around my rope, I tie a noose around my neck tonight, or I come here and protest. And I think the government would prefer I come here and protest. And I was like, can't argue with that, man. Can't argue with that.
Yeah, wow.
So, you know, in life, heavy. Things are not black and white. Hey, and like if there's anything that I would, and I'm sure you'd agree, like want to like, I guess, try and highlight in all of that debate is bring back the art of nuance, you know. Nothing is as cut and
100%.
Dry. Nothing is as cut and dry as we'd like it to be. There are always holes in my argument as much as their argument. More holes in their argument. But
yeah,
no,
definitely. Definitely.
But no, yeah, no, bringing nuance back to it all is a good resting place to be, you know.
Make nuance great again.
Totally.
Sure. For sure, man.
Hey, man, I've also been seeing that you do a lot of rock climbing.
I do again, yes.
Fuck yeah, man.
I'm back. How about yourself?
I really got into bouldering at the bouldering gym at the start of the lockdown and just before, and was like, I think at one point going 2 to 3 times a week. I was really enjoying it. Nice. It was so fun, and just completely fallen off the wagon. I'm skinny fat now. I'm skinny fat.
Yeah.
I appear to be thin, but I'm fat within. Yeah. And definitely lost all my strength. But I think like, yeah. So I want to ask you, how do I get to the point where I can go outdoors without an instructor and just start climbing shit, knowing all the safety? How long were you climbing before you could start doing that?
Well, I'm fortunate that I started outdoors. So I started climbing outdoors.
Yeah.
Until last year, until last September, I'd only gone to an indoor gym, I think like once or twice. But I did have quite a few years off, while I was touring and stuff for many reasons. Like my climbing partners moved away. I had a really bad back injury. My music kicked off, so I didn't climb for quite a while, here and there a little bit. But, I mean, to answer your question as well, like bouldering, I mean, all you need is like a chalk bag, some shoes and a bouldering mat, and you can like, man, you can go boulder. You can go find like a bridge in Collingwood and like boulder that.
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, obviously go outdoors to find natural rock boulders. So bouldering is really nice and free flow like that. Like that's kind of, I compare that to kind of just like why skateboarding is so nice, where you can just grab your skateboard and just head off and like go down to the skate park. Rope rock climbing, you obviously need a lot of gear. You need a lot of safety knowledge, which comes with time, experience and being, trained, I guess, by an instructor or by your friends that take you out. I was fortunate enough to do it a few times when I was younger. Had a friend who was really into it and I did it a couple of times. I was like 16, 17, 18. Got like right into it when I was like 25. They took me, like my friend, same friend, took me outdoors and I linked him up with another mate. And we all just climbed together for quite a while.
Mm.
And that was like my proper introduction to like outdoor, like learning anchors, learning how to lead climb and just like learning all the safety stuff. But honestly, man, like it's such an amazing sport for the reason that you learn so much constantly. Like I am such a noob. Like I mean, I'm not like, I am proficient. Like I can go out and lead climb and my recent trips, I've gone out by myself to Arapiles to meet and just met people and just climbed with them. And I've made some really nice friends through doing that. Yeah, it does take a lot of time, man. Like it takes a lot of money to get sort of set up at the start, you know, a little bit. And then just, having a discipline for safety. And I think the best sort of thing is going out with experienced people and learning, you know, like whether it's finding a couple of friends that do it and going out with them and then just, you know, they do the lead climb and set up the top rope and just sort of being around the ropes and
slowly,
the harnesses
slowly,
and the
slowly.
Blade devices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly, man.
So you didn't
it's
do
not
a
something
course.
You'd want to rush.
You didn't do a like a safety training course. You don't need a license to be able to like go out or you know, you don't need to pass anything for like a safety check. You could actually just pick that up by hanging around enough rock climbers for enough years and going out and doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like
Sorry, go on.
No, like how much I just want to get into it. I've been seeing.
No, dude, I'm
seeing your stories and stuff, and like, so just before lockdown, we went to me and my wife went to India, and we went to Vietnam before that. And her brother has just gotten like right into it, and he just travels the world and goes like climbs a cliff in Greece or Italy and like by the beach. So we're in Vietnam in Ha Long Bay, which is like these huge rocks that just jut out of the water, and the plan was to just you could free climb, and if you fall you just fall into the water, but yes. The tide was out, so we couldn't do that, but we ended up just paying a dude with a boat and going out and just going onto some tiny island that you could walk around in 10 minutes and just climbing, and it's just like 99.9% of travelers are not doing that. Not seeing that side of the and to be in the most unique landscapes, and I imagine there's just a sense of a massive achievement when you like can see a mountain or a cliff and climb it. I feel like I would really like to get into outdoor climbing.
Well, first of all, let's make it happen.
Yeah, just fishing for an invite. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, I was just going to say, transfer to my Western Union account and we can sort that out. But there's the sense of achievement is real, man. And like being around beautiful places, like especially even in Victoria, like, you know, there's four or five places that you can day trip from Melbourne. And I mean, you could even day trip to the Grampians if you want, but before that, there's like four or five places you can day trip, and you can be in like beautiful places rock climbing. You know, so it's so accessible here. We are so lucky in Victoria. We have some of the best climbing in the world at the Grampians and Mount Arapiles. Like, they're world class climbing spots.
I went to Mount Arapiles about 6 months ago for the first time. I didn't know it was a rock climbing spot. We just went to camp, and as soon as we got there, it was like,
oh no shit,
it was the spot. Everyone there just like you can just hear the clinkety clink, clinkety clink of all the bloody carabiners. I'm like, fuck, this place is sick. And what a cool landscape.
Did you like
It's beautiful, but it's just like flat as flat can be, and then this big mountain jutting out of just this flat plain.
And it's just like, it's like the whole mountain is rock. Like, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, beautiful.
I've recently fallen in love with that place, man. It's absolutely beautiful. Something about climbing for me is, and I think this is why I would like to see you get into it, is it's the closest I get to the same mindset as when I'm really in the zone creating. Like, it's such a mental thing. It is quite physical in one sense, but it's such a meditative sort of mindset to get into, to be at your peak performance, just like creating. You know, it's like you can, like we were saying earlier, you can like laboriously create and be like, oh, I got to finish this track, or I got to finish this painting, or like, oh, I'm just going to have a crack today and like, this feels all right, I'm doing it, or like, oh, today I'm not really feeling it. But then there's those times where it's just like, You are at one with the art. You are doing the art, and the art is doing you. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's the same with climbing. It's like when you can tap into that sort of space, that's when it's happening, you know? And it is such a combination of physical moves, gear, technical knowledge, in sync with the weather and in sync with the rock, and then more than anything, in sync with your own self, that it's very rewarding, man. It's just a really, really nice feeling.
It's also like problem solving as well, isn't it? And I think that's like...
Totally.
That's the best thing about any kind of sport, is when you've got a task at hand or a problem to solve, the strength or the fitness aspect is kind of peripheral. You're not just, it's not the same as just going to the gym and lifting the weight or running the track, you know, where you're just like, oh, just keep going. It's just like you want to keep going because you want to overcome whatever you're, or you want to win. And that problem solving aspect to climbing, which is very creative too, you know.
Exactly. I was going to say that.
I really like. So do you have any, where have you done any like overseas climbing trips or anything like that, or mainly just in Australia or in Victoria?
Yeah, I haven't, man. I would love to. I have been, and this is one of the things that's like making me reconsider my sort of what I do with my music, because I've been to so many beautiful places and I haven't seen them. Like I've sort of just like seen them, but I've just been at a festival the whole time.
Right, or fly in, fly out kind of thing.
Yeah, or like even fly in, stay at the door for like 4 days and then fly out, you know, and like something that really blew my mind was like I've flown basically to the Great Barrier Reef like 7 times.
Right.
And I've never even been to the water. You know, it's like I've just been to the airports, but I've never actually been to the water, let alone the Great Barrier Reef. So I would love to do more seeing things for travel rather than just playing. And I'm planning either next year or the year after to like go to Europe and meet up with my climbing friend who taught me climbing. He lives in Norway now. He does a lot of ice climbing as well. So I'm hoping to go there and climb in Norway.
Yeah, ice climbing.
Yeah, dude, it's fucking, it's so gnarly. Oh my God.
Dude, did you see, there's this video on, I saw it on Instagram that was going around not that long ago of an ice climber and a waterfall just like the ice just started shifting and a waterfall just started spraying out onto him while he like arm and water just like shooting down at like, you know, incredible pace on him. And he, in the caption was like, this was one of the hairiest moments I've ever been in, but obviously I've uploaded it. I'm here to tell the tale. You're watching it. You're like, I don't know how this can, you can't see. You've got a waterfall just spraying on you. You're holding on. Like that just looked like one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen.
Freezing cold.
Freezing. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. How cold would that be?
Cold as ice.
Man, ice climbing. Far out. Not for me. I can pass on that, to be honest.
I mean, to be honest, I'm going to try it when I'm in Norway because YOLO. Yeah. But there's heaps of places in Europe. Like Europe has got, and I want to go to Scotland to like trace my roots because I'm like, I don't know, fifth or sixth generation Australian. So I know I've got roots in Scotland and England. So I want to check all that out. And I'd love to climb overseas, man. But for now, I'm like, I've fallen in love with Mount Arapiles, to be honest. I am, it's like a lot of time I'm just scheming. I'm like, oh, how am I going to get back out to the Raps? Like, when am I going to get it back out there? And like doing a few climbing trips in between just like to keep me fresh to go back to the Raps. You should come back on time. There's a lot of boulders down there as well. Like there's all boulders down the bottom of the cliffs and stuff. And
yeah,
it's a really beautiful community there too.
Yeah,
it's
cool. Really nice. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. It's, how far is it? 4 hour drive? Yeah. Hour north of the Grampians, I guess.
Yeah. It's like 5.5 from my house. So it's a bit of a mish, but yes, it's doable. Like I got a friend who lives in Carlton and like she does just weekends like all the time.
Sick.
Northcote. Yeah. So
yeah.
But yeah, man, I think you'd like it. I want to say on the problem solving thing as well, like I don't know if you feel like this, but I think it's a little bit subconscious when you're creating, but like a creative piece is kind of for me like a subconscious problem to solve. Like the problem is like, how am I communicating the best I can through the tools that I have and to get to a finished result or something like that. That does feel like problem solving to me as well.
Mm. Yep.
Do you feel like that when you're making art?
Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine, another artist, Ash Coates, I think, once said to me, which I resonated with too much, kind of was saying, you know, when you're making a painting, everyone thinks, oh, man, it must be so great. You just get to paint all day. But he's like, well, you're looking at something and you think it's shit every step of the way and you're just trying to make it not. Yeah, I'm trying to unshit it, trying to correct it. Like, nah, fuck that up. That looks bad, and you're frustrated. So, fuck, I sound like I'm really down on art at the moment. I'm doing a lot of art right now. I'm in the thick of it.
It just sucks.
But yes, it is problem solving for sure. Every step of the way is like, it is, problem solving. How am I going to? Constantly playing with different techniques. Nothing ever really works twice, you know. I feel like every painting, if you're doing it right for yourself, you should be trying to learn and overcome in every work, not just rinse and repeat. So, I'm sure there's elements of that would be the same in music, hey?
In music and in climbing, man.
Yeah.
Like, I think you should definitely, like, come for a climb.
Fuck yeah. Sure. I'm keen. Yeah. I'm super keen. Yeah. So, yeah, you're kind of saying at the start of the podcast you've taken a bit of time away. Do you have many projects or gigs or albums or mixes or anything that you're kind of working up towards at the moment?
I would love to say yes, but not particularly.
Yeah.
Hey,
the downtime is just as important, man.
Yeah, and I've just been, like, enjoying doing other things because I don't feel like COVID was like a proper break for me, as in like the COVID lockdown periods wasn't like it was like a forced break.
Mm.
And I was actually still creating quite a bit. I just wasn't writing psytrance. But lately I just haven't been doing much music at all. I've been climbing a lot, shifting the house a little bit and spaces. And I'm glad I have taken this break because now I'm like really starting to get like, oh, I want to like make shit again.
Yeah, itching for it.
But on a different level, like not as so focused for like the next gig or for like the next release or something like that. Like I'm really leaning right back into like my analog setups and going deep back into my modular world. And I'm actually not doing it for a purpose for a while. Like I said, taken no bookings. I've got one more gig to play, which is in Darwin, which will be really exciting. That's sick. The end of July.
Great.
That's so cool. Super stoked. That's going to be with Megapixel and Smilk. I'm very excited.
Dope.
Actually, might do some climbing up there.
Mm.
But I do want to play again. I'm just like really going to like let the art speak for itself and really just lean into creating for the sake of it again because I feel like I definitely lost touch with that when playing so many gigs and like constantly playing for releases. And I'm going to bring this up because I'm just looking at it right now, but this is one of my new favorite things. I know it's a podcast, but this is a keytar. This is a Yamaha SHS-10 FM digital keyboard with MIDI, which means you can hook it up to other synthesizers and control synthesizers with it. I got that off Marketplace for $200 in the plastic, in the wrapping from 1982 by a Yamaha technician from the 80s. And he hadn't touched it. He's like, oh, I had a bunch of them in the cupboard and like, yeah, may as well go to someone who's going to use it.
Wow.
Like peeled the protector off the screen and everything.
How good. So that's like from the 80s, so is it?
This is literally from 1982 and I'm the first user.
That's so cool.
And I've just like, now I've rigged that up to my synths. I'm like, it's my new jam thing, man. Like I just come and I've got this like loopers and shit set up. So I just come in, turn that on, like control synths and start looping and just like doing it for fun, like pure fun space travel again, like full space travel mode.
Yeah, that's so good.
I answered the question.
Yeah.
I think there was an answer to a question in there.
Hey, I did have like one other question which relates to both your music and your podcast. At the start of each episode, you've got your theme song, but you've also got a cool groovy beat. And I've noticed that I haven't listened to all the episodes, but they seem different every time. Are you writing a different little fun beat before every episode?
Thanks for reminding me of the extra work that I need to do for the podcast that I totally forgotten about. Shit. It doesn't. It hasn't repeated. It's different every time.
And they're original kind of.
Yeah, that's original composition.
And all different genres.
Like sometimes it'll.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it'll be I'll just pull it from my library of, you know, thousands of unreleased pieces of music. Or a lot of the time I'll like write it specifically for that episode. I'll take how I'm feeling from the chat and then like put something together or I'll just be feeling some certain way. And
I really,
yeah, I think that's what's been it's fun about it, man.
Yeah, I was going to say I really like that aspect of creating. I'm very envious of. I'd love to be a musician. I just have not. Yeah, I suck at music, but yeah, creating a little vibe going into the chat, whether it's inspired by that musician's music or that conversation, I thought was a really fun, nice element. And but yeah, I can see that also being like a big burden when you're like doing intros. I find doing intros like just mind like it's so hard to get it out sometimes. I can't talk to a mic by myself, but making a whole song, making a whole tune as well would just be like but I mean, like it.
It's kind of like it's yeah, it's like a double-edged sword. I was like, it's really fun, but I feel like I kind of fucked myself from the very start. I set the bar really high, like I was so enthusiastic at the start, and if you listen to like the very first, probably like the first like I don't know 10 or so episodes, like the production level is, I mean, the detail of production is very high. Like I kind of slipped from that a little bit because it takes so much work to like, you know, I'd have the intro tune and like there was effects on the voices, and then through the chat I would like insert little quotes and like make effects and like insert little like audio things and all this sort of stuff. But I was putting in probably like 8 to 10 hours a week of work to do that, you know, including the chat. And it's just like not enough time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But well, I set the bar high and I was just like, oh, damn, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably only going to be picked up by your fellow musician buddies. So dumb like me, it's just like, cool.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's a fun way of like breaking free of, you know, your set style and just playing around with a few different, you know, genre hopping for the sake of it as well. But
Yeah, man.
It's cool.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you enjoyed that. I've been toying with the idea of just like picking like, I don't know, like 10 or so, maybe 15 of my favorite intro musics and just like releasing them for free on Bandcamp or something like that.
Yeah. But sick. The tune of fat album.
Ask people if they want to hear that. Mm. Yeah, like the fat tunes or something.
Is that what the title means? Fat tunes, tune of fat?
No,
or was it chewing
means,
the fat?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. My ex-housemate came up with that with me. Like, we were like, what are we going to call it? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you talk heaps of shit. Yeah, chew on the fat. I was like, hell yeah, tune of fat. Tune of fat, baby.
Dude, that's
simple.
That's the album, though. Fat tunes with the same logo.
Yeah.
Right there.
100%.
Bang.
I might do that. How did you come up with your podcast name?
Well, it was kind of... I need to really figure out a way to make this a quick answer. I mean, kind of like the battle with being a creative or an artist where like I liked the idea of no plan B. You know, you just kind of, you've chosen not to do the status quo, get the 9 to 5 and I've been making art professionally for probably like 10 or 12 years now. And kind of going back is not really an option. So you're kind of in too deep. You're like, fuck, you know, when am I going to make the money? It's like, well, I'm fucking in too deep. So that was the initial idea of, and talking to other artists and other creative that are just in too deep. You know, it's the only way is through, full steam ahead with whatever the thing is. But then that also just expanded into like conspiracy theories and talking to flat earthers and all sorts of like, it's a nice broad title that it can explore a variety of interesting, odd things, I thought.
Nice. Mm. It definitely is true to its name.
Yep. Cheers. Nice one.
Love
man.
It. Yeah.
Dude, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I'm so glad so awesome to finally meet you, man. And yeah, really appreciate you making the time.
Man, I'm so stoked. I have been wanting to be interviewed for so long.
I know. Is it different having the role reversed?
It's good, man. It's like, I don't know. Actually, it's just like talking with a mate, to be honest. This has been a great chat. I've really appreciated it.
Sick. Awesome.
It's been good.
How do people find your music? How do people find your podcast?
Well, people can find me playing on Mars next week with Elon Musk. That should be a pretty good gig.
Sick.
I'm going up on the SpaceX. You can find my music. Look, I'm on Bandcamp. I think it's like squidmusic.bandcamp.com. That's where I just put whatever out. Bandcamp Higher Recordings, that's where a lot of the trance is. Squid on SoundCloud, SoundCloud/SquidFingers.
SKWID.
WID. Yep. Yeah, just find me. I'm on the internet. Squid, SKWID. I'm either doing weird stuff, making weird stuff, or saying weird stuff. So you can find me around then, or Spotify or Tuna Fat. Hit me up.
Legend.
Yeah.
Awesome,
yeah.
Man. Much appreciated. And thank you everyone for listening. Have a lovely day.
Hey, and just while we're on air, yeah. I'm just going to rope Jack into coming rock climbing with me.
100%. Let's do it, baby. I'm fucking keen. Yeah, I got hooked off to Vietnam, man. It's so fun. Yeah. So free. So legend. Free. I think.
Yep. Epic.
Legend. Appreciate it. All right. Thanks, everyone. See ya. And to play us out, strap yourselves in for one of Squid's tracks titled Découvert du Trésor. We'll be right back.